welcome to Going Shamanic. My name is Jennifer Ingrassio, and my medicine name is Snowhawk. I'm really pleased tonight to have this show on the healing power of writing. This show is pre-recorded, so we won't be taking callers. I've recently been reading Brené Brown's book, where she outlines the research she's gathered on vulnerability and shame. In the book, Daring Greatly, How the Courage to be Vulnerable Transforms the Way We Live, Love, Parent, and Lead, Dr. Brown talks about shame resilience as a way to counter the naturally occurring emotion of shame. Quote, shame resilience is a strategy for protecting connection, our connection with ourselves and our connections with people that we care about. But resilience requires cognition or thinking, and that's where shame has a huge advantage. When shame descends, we almost always are hijacked by the limbic system. Shame thrives on secret keeping. Since his early work on the effects of secret keeping, James Pennebaker has focused much of his research on the healing power of expressive writing. In his book, Writing to Heal, Pennebaker writes, since the mid-1980s, an increasing number of studies have focused on the value of expressive writing as a way to bring about healing. The evidence is mounting that the act of writing about traumatic experience for as little as 15 or 20 minutes a day for 3 or 4 days can produce measurable changes in physical and mental health. Emotional writing can also affect people's sleep habits, work efficiency, and how they connect with others. Shame resilience is a practice, and like Pennebaker, I think writing about our shame experiences is an incredibly powerful component of practice. It takes time to cultivate that practice and courage to reach out and talk about hard things. Unquote. Today's guest has a lot of experience in the realm of writing to heal. She has just published a poem in the book Women's Power Stories, Honoring the Feminine Principle of Life. I'd like to kick off the show with a reading of the piece that appears in that book, and it's titled P.S. I don't remember my first gasps of ripe rejection or how they ignited my abject disaffection. Born penisless was the imperfection, which delivered my developing disconnection. I remember rampant rivers of ragged rage, wrought in the covert midnight battles they would wage. A chameleon captive in a confounding cage learns how seemingly safe it feels to disengage. I remember the few heart truths I spoke, love notes written that would merely provoke, a raw ridicule causing my bones to choke. How could a child be born such a joke? I remember the moment my heart shattered, scurriously sliced, slivered, and splattered. I ran, leaving it totally tattered. An endless escape was all that mattered. I remember a burgeoning well of damnation, guiltily despising the garrisons of isolation, where weathered shields of desolate desperation threatened to collapse into annihilation. I remember the suffocating pit of self-hate, possessed by demon thoughts to torture and mutilate, piercing, punishing pain from cells inflamed by the weight of an implicitly inhumed, implosive state. I remember edging into death's enticing entranceway, and the allure to simply allow it all to slip away. In that choice point, I heard, in a voiceless, forceless way, a speck of a soft, still something that suggested I stay. I remember the glimmer of gratitude's mark and how it spurred that speck into a spark of life force energy, encouraging me to embark on the grim, grueling grind out of the dark. I remember doctors who swore there was no cure. Thus a lifetime of harsh meds I must endure. When a voice inside screamed, "There is a way, I am sure," I shakily stated I'd succeed with my detour. I remember the people who helped me renew, guiding me to grasp the gifts in all I'd been through, freed by forgivenesses that I'll forever pursue. I'm sustained by a joyously grateful point of view. I imagine being a crone who makes an impact with her heart and with the womanly wisdom she has to impart. You are lovable as you are. Love yourself. Listen to and express your true self. Never, ever give up on yourself or your dreams. Sue Burley Lightning Heart has a BSc in pharmacy and has been a personal trainer, water fitness instructor, and an emotional kinesiology therapist. She is now a shamanic coach and practitioner. And while Sue began writing poetry as a young child, she stopped for many years, eventually returning to it after she began reading Dr. Seuss books to her children. And we welcome Sue to the show today. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Jen. Thank you. Well done on that reading.
You know, it's such a powerful piece. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more about its history and what it did and changed inside of you to write that.
The history of that is pretty well what I would call my life story. And as I listen to you read it, I hear it as my perception of my childhood. And the piece that you spoke at the beginning in the introduction about shame resilience, it speaks very highly of what I've felt as I began writing poetry. So I came in, I was meant to be a boy, and I wasn't. And from then, I kind of went into shame. And as I started writing poetry, it wasn't received as I had intended it to or hoped it would, and was shamed for my poetry, which is why I stopped writing. And the darkness in that poem, that piece, is about sort of what happens to a mind when it sort of turns on itself. And that was the expression of the darkness I went through for many, many years until I, only 6 years ago, nearly died and got myself to the point where I heard that's what people call the still, soft, quiet voice within, the light within, that was so gentle and unobtrusive that just suggested I wasn't done and to turn everything around. And I'm still on that journey, which is why I call this piece, yes, power story, but also there's always a postscript to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I know that you work with a lot of different strategies for healing as a shamanic coach and practitioner. Why is writing so effective for you particularly?
For me, writing is that expressive, and as I've come back to it, it really is the being able to express what I'm feeling and what I'm going through. And I've found that there's many different reasons why I've gone back to writing. For me, especially poetry, because it's open, it allows for individual interpretation, it invokes other people's insights and intuition as well as the writer's, my own. It's compressed information, and I find that less can lead to more. So what I would say, one of the answers to that question is what is something I've just started practicing in the last maybe 20 days, is to write intently one sentence every day, and then to freeform write what comes out of that. And I've found that very healing. And it's not writing, and I realize for some people writing pages works for them. For me, writing poetry, open poetry, and for each line it's maybe just a word, and it's so open that by the time I've written several lines or the whole page, a whole new insight has come in, and I'm finding it very healing and very, it's very insightful.
Yeah, there's something for me too about writing that I see myself in a new way when I write. It's like, if I'm just thinking, I don't get the same, my brain doesn't have to go through the same process if I'm thinking as it does when I'm writing. So it forces me into a completely different place where I have to really think about what I believe. And sometimes when I write down the things that have been floating around my head, I'm like, oh God, that's been floating around in my head. And how long has that been floating around in my head? Like, it's a way to bring the self-talk out of my head instead of having, so I can actually see it in some ways. And I know you talked about that negativity that you were stuck in for a long time. Did your writing in some way help you to see those negative patterns in a different way?
Eventually, I would say yes. When I was in sort of the darkest part of my journey, I wasn't writing, and any attempts to sort of led nowhere. When there came a time when, and I will say, Dr. Seuss, as you mentioned in the introduction, who is my favorite poet and writer, something about reading Dr. Seuss totally switched my way of writing and my way of looking at, I'm going to say creativity. And for me, that's such an important word, creativity, an important action, the creative process. And so I believe that the writing, whether it's poetry, write any kind of writing, that creative expression is so vital to our self-discovery and our expression as spirit. The universe is all creative expression. The earth, the plants, humans, we're all creative expressions of spirit. And thus, for us to be expanding and growing, I believe we need to be creatively expressing in whatever way works for us. And writing and poetry. And wouldn't you say also music is also another way of creating and expressing, and that sort of journey inward to find ourselves, to find the spirit or uncover the light within. I believe that, and have found that poetry and writing absolutely helps that journey. Mm-hmm. And then, if I may say, some of the things that Dr. Seuss also sort of pointed out to me is that writing and books can be fun, and they make us laugh. And I believe, I felt that when Dr. Seuss wrote, we were convinced of, like, he was totally immersed in what he was writing. And I believe as the reader, we felt that. It has a lovely rhythm and rhyme, lots of repetition. And the chaos, he'd start out with something normal and go into something chaotic, and always then bring it back to normal. And one thing I loved, and this is probably my creative, as I work the creativity, he created his own words. Now, what a great example for children. That it's fine to create your own words, to create your own characters, to create your own things, and have fun playing at it. So that's my little spiel on Dr. Seuss. And while I'm on this, I had something I wanted to ask you, if I may, from the point of view of a teacher who works with children and a teacher who also works with parents. So my early days of writing poetry was shamed, and so I stopped. And wouldn't you, so what I'm wondering is, nowadays, so this was a long time ago, 50 or more years ago, nowadays, are parents more open to the creative expression of their children and, sort of champion it, encourage it, and are receptive to it? what would you say?
Well, I think it's a hard question to answer because I don't work with, I work with parents that are already kind of alternative in their views. And they're already kind of outside the box in terms of education. So they tend to encourage that out-of-the-boxness in their kids, too. What I know is that there's a lot of people that have had a lot of wounding. And actually, this is a question I was going to ask you because a lot of people have these, you know, memories from school where they were shamed for their writing or they were shamed for their singing or, you know, we've said this in other shows on music or songs where people were told by their choir teachers not to sing, to pretend they were singing, to mouth the words. And that can be so destructive for a young person that is just developing their skills in that area. So I would like to say that that's gone, Sue, and that parents and teachers encourage kids. But I think we have a long way to go, and the reason for that is because there has been so much wounding. And there has been so much shaming around creativity, mostly because people just don't understand what creativity is or how to get into that flow or why it might even be important. So I was going to actually ask you about the connection that you find between your shamanic work and your writing.
I would say the connection there is because of the creativity that it's part of that journey. So for me, shamanism has been a journey inward, the uncovering of myself, finding my connection to spirit. And writing totally helps facilitate that. It's, for me, goes hand in hand in that. It provides great emotional support in that it can facilitate the movement of emotion. As for me, poetry has guideposts and signposts, and rather than my interpretation or my intent in writing a poem being the only way, the only interpretation, it can provide guideposts and help people maybe recognize emotions that they've repressed or denied, mm-hmm. or escaped from, and provide them perhaps a safe way to just, like a support, to help move emotion out. And I see that happening in both the writing and in shamanism. Mm-hmm. That's one way that I see the similarity.
Yeah, it's interesting because this weekend I was at a Reiki retreat with a bunch of people that we've all worked on a healing team together for many years. And all of the women that were there had read the Power Stories book. And so I had an opportunity to talk to them about it. And one of the ladies said to me, you know, there were different reactions, right? One person said, I just couldn't put the book down. Like I read it voraciously. And I said, so what was it about it? She said, you know, I could find myself, parts of myself and parts of the things I've struggled with or I've lived through in almost every single woman's story. And to see it written down and to see that somebody had the courage to write those vulnerable things down and share them with the world was really healing for a lot of those women. You know, other women couldn't read the stories that quickly because of the emotional impact they had. They had to read, like they would read a story or two and then they'd have to put the book down and, you know, come back at another time. So there is something that helps people to tap into their inner worlds in a different way, I think, is what I notice with writing anyway.
Right, and I think it works both ways. The writer has that experience, and whoever's reading, the reader, will have their own, you know, unique experience and can be healing for both in their own ways. Mm. And I see that very similar to shamanism.
Yeah, because you also perform your poetry. You don't only, this was the first published piece that you put out there, as far as I understand, but you do a lot of speaking.
I'm practicing speaking. Mm. I would like to be able to present it and write poetry for presentation. It's another step in this journey to be able to present a poem in a way that will impact people. So it is, the delivery is as important as the words.
And what are some of the things that, some of the feedback that people have given so far in terms of your poems when they're spoken out loud? Because I find some of those spoken word poets very, very impactful. Sometimes I can't breathe.
They are really impactful. Yeah. And I've heard some that are not so impactful, and some that aren't. And that's why, for me, the next step might be to be able to get into the emotion. Can you speak, you know, the emotion of the words? Mm-hmm. And it takes reading, or, you know, reading a poem to a whole new level. And I've been in a room where someone is reading or doing the spoken word poetry, and it really is a whole new level of bringing up emotion. And I personally like it when that piece has a conclusion that helps me. Sometimes the piece ends and I'm left with all my emotions hanging, and that might be the intent. For me personally, I like to have a little bit of a, come back to the normalcy kind of thing, or a little bit of healing come out of it, rather than let's bring up all my emotions and just let them hang there. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely just different people's styles of writing.
Well, I think there's some care in that too, because in shamanism, we steer away from re-traumatizing people through having them relive past trauma, for instance, when they're going through the healing process. So so that's an example of how you might use your writing as a positive force. But how do you work that balance with yourself when you do writing, where you're writing a piece that's not going to re-traumatize you, but is speaking the truth of what your experience was, so somebody else can maybe see part of their life mirrored in what you're sharing?
I would say, as in the piece that you spoke at the beginning, it's coming to what was the healing in it, or how have I come out of it. I'm not going to write, personally, I'm not going to write a piece that keeps me dangling in something that's unresolved. And when I write, as I'm doing my daily writing now, I always write it until there's some glimmer of a resolution, some glimmer of an insight or an awareness. And it always comes, if I sit down and just start off, like I said, with my first sentence of intention, and just open this, and these words aren't coming from my head, they're just words, and this is a free form poetry, it's for nobody else, and I just write like a line with one word or a few words until there is something comes out of it, a glimmer of a resolution. And when I write pieces, they will always have some glimmer of a resolution. I want to take people through, you know, some sort of a journey and have, you know, the quote unquote happy ending. But what I mean is a glimmer of the resolution of it.
Not leaving people in the darkness, but leaving them with some light. Right. They can grab onto.
Right.
Yeah. And I think, go ahead, Sue.
And I encourage people to try that sort of creative expression, and it can be, as you mentioned at the beginning, 15 to 20 minutes. And I believe people will be surprised that there can be a glimmer of the light in just doing that.
Yeah, and that... So that kind of leads me to the question of, you know, what would you say to somebody who has a lot of trauma around writing from when they were kids, or they get caught up in their, you know, their spelling and their grammar. What would you say to somebody who might benefit from this as a practice without putting their work out into the world for publishing purposes?
I would say, work through it? I would say start by reading Dr. Seuss. Only because the more light it can be, the lighter, the more fun, the more you can play with it, even if it is something dark. If you can bring a bit of a play to it, and I always keep in the back of my mind, for the, especially this practice that I'm doing right now, is that it's only for me.
Yeah.
And no one is going to see this. It doesn't matter what I write. It's only for me. And there is no right or wrong. It's just to see. It's an exploration. And it's not an exploration of my mind. It's an exploration of what I'm feeling, what's inside. And I would also suggest address one thing at a time. Don't go for your whole life story. Perhaps today, what is something that came up for you? What's got a little bit of niggly, not sitting right with you? Write that word and just see what flows from that.
Yeah, there's a, Julia Cameron talks a lot about that in The Artist's Way, and she has people writing morning pages, 3 pages every morning of just stream of consciousness, like whatever is going on, whether they're bored or they're tired, or she has them just write. And I did this practice for some years, and I found that it was amazing how much I edited myself when I was writing and how harmful that was to my creative flow. So through writing the morning pages, I just got really comfortable, I guess you can say, with just writing what came and not worrying about it so much, you know? So something like that might also be good for some of the folks that are listening to the show that want to start but may not know exactly what they can do. That's a good resource to do. So this leads me to another thing that Brené Brown says is, quote, to put our art, our writing, our photography, our ideas out into the world with no assurance of acceptance or appreciation, that's vulnerability, unquote. So you've taken an extra step in putting your work out into the world much more publicly. Why has it been important to you to take this risk, and what have you learned from it?
I would say it's been important for me to take the risk as a, I'm going to say it's almost a piece of self-love to prove that it's like I've healed this piece that had me shamed and running away, and I've uncovered the spirit, myself, the light within. And it, as I believe all lights, all spirits, all people deserve to be out in the world and seen, and to get to the place where it doesn't matter what other people think of it, because we are that self-caring and self-loving, and I believe that's the place for me to get to, that I'm putting what's true to me out in the world and my perception of my journey, and it doesn't matter anymore what anyone thinks. Mm. What was the other part of your question?
Yeah, just what you've learned from it in terms of, I can imagine that not everybody will be thrilled with, you know, what our truth is. And I've certainly come up against that with my articles and blogs and things I write. Oftentimes they trigger other people, and then I end up having to sort of figure out what to do, if anything, with their response. So is there anything like that that's come up from either your speeches or work that you started publishing?
I would say from the poems that I have verbally, orally presented, there's been people who didn't understand them. And I would say this has been a history of mine writing poetry, is people didn't understand them. And I had to get to the place where that's fine. If I check in, this is my expression of myself. Mm-hmm. And that if I'm doing no harm and I'm expressing what is my truth, then I allow it to be. And if people don't understand it, they don't get it, then that's fine. There are probably a lot of things that they would say and write and their art that I wouldn't understand as well. And that is fine as well. I'd say for me, it's becoming comfortable and accepting who I am and what is my expression of me. Again, doing no harm. Mm. And there will be people who will understand it or will get something out of it, and there won't be. And I'd say that's true for any art and creative expression. And I would say I would be encouraging more other people and all of us to accept the creative expression in all of its ways. Mm-hmm. So I'd say it's been sort of a signal of my own inner journey that I can say this is me, this is how I express what I feel right now. And it is getting to the place where you can be shame resilient. It's a healing learning process of going within to find that place where you're standing with yourself, sort of, naked in the world kind of thing.
I don't know if you find this with your work, Sue, but when I put work out into the world, I have an intent for why it's going out into the world too. So there are a lot of things I write I would never put it out into the world. Mm-hmm. Or there are some things that have taken me a few years. I wrote them a long time ago and they took a while for me to send them out into the world, but I always have a really clear intent about why I'm doing that. Especially if it's a piece that is vulnerable or reveals something about my journey or my life that I don't usually tell everybody. You know, we all have those stories where we're like, well, my friends know, but I'm not sure that I would want the whole the whole world knowing unless there's a really important purpose for telling this story. So that's another thing I personally measure it against, is did it accomplish its intent?
Yes, I that's an important point. And I always have an intent for what I'm writing and for why I'm putting it out as well. Mm-hmm. And if it's for speaking it might be, can I make an impact on people? Can people understand or get some kind of an inside view of what I'm trying to portray? Or can I make people feel? Mm. And also what I love to do is make people laugh. So whereas it's interesting because I started out when I was 5 getting laughed at my poetry, because the intent, it's a really good point. My intent when I was writing at 5 was not to be laughed at. It wasn't to make people laugh. I was trying to express love for someone. Mm. Now I love to write people. I love to write verses about people, that what I see in them in an honorable way, but that's light and makes people laugh and you know, adds a little bit of playfulness to you know, poetry and what we're reading and perhaps what I'm, you know, what I see in you. Mm-hmm. It's always in a non-harmful way. And there's that intent. So thus, back to Dr. Seuss, if I think fun and play is crucial.
And you have a gift for seeing people's spirits too, which I think that really comes through in your writing. You've written about me before, so I can say that. I wasn't offended.
I could read it to you.
You could. I don't have it handy, so.
I do.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Do I have your permission?
Yes, you have permission.
Okay, thank you. Jen Snowhawk sings, dances, and drums with glee, gracefully embodying Lomi Lomi. Caring for the children and ancestry, she lives aloha, compassionately. There you go.
Thank you, Sue.
You're welcome.
That's up in my healing room downstairs in my house. It was a beautiful thing. It was a beautiful gift to be able to just take that in and to be seen, like what you were saying before. I do my work and I have no idea whether people, and it's actually not even my focus, whether people see that my intent or not. I just do my work. So when it's reflected back that people are really seeing what I'm doing, that in the way that I've intended it, that's a really huge, huge gift. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, I'd like to read another poem that you wrote a long time ago as you searched to explain why the spirit of a friend who died when you were 19 kept showing up. Can you set this one up for us by telling us a little bit about what the writing revealed to you about this mystical event?
Yes, this was the first time I came face to face with a spirit. And it was a friend who died in a head-on collision. And for some reason, pardon me, he kept coming back. I kept feeling him around me, and this went on for years and years and years. And I began this writing trying to understand why. In the midst of this writing, I went to a psychic who told me that Doug, who this poem's about, didn't know he was dead and was hanging around me because he had died so suddenly. He helped him cross over. And then I finished this poem before I knew what was going to happen. It was confirmed later that Doug came back as one of my spirit guides. And I had written this poem before that all resolved. And that's the setting of this poem.
Now, would you like to read it?
I don't have it in front of me.
Okay, so then I guess I'm reading it.
You can read it.
Out at the edge of my periphery, do you so patiently reside? Are you just an imprinted memory of a friend who long ago died? Through the haze of that morning light, night, rather, you came. You stood there like you'd never left and said that you and I would meet again. Still, I was anguished and bereft. Over the years, somehow I felt you near. A thought blazes through my head, then gone again. And though it's been unclear, I've not forgotten what you said. Now, as I open my eyes to my soul, there you are, where you've always been, haven't you? Now, as I open my heart to you, your heart, I am immersed in an infinite flow of compassion. Now, as I open my soul to your soul, we are the blissful oneness of the universe. I'm grateful you are one of my blessings. I know you'll hear me as I pray. How can I help ease the world's sufferings? God, I'm ready. Show me the way. And is he still coming to you and working with you, Sue? Has that continued?
Yes, he works with me in a different way. He's not so close. I do feel him as part of my guide group, and I do acknowledge him with gratitude every morning and know that he's part of helping me move forward in this lifetime.
And what a beautiful gift to give to him. Too.
Yes, and I'm pretty sure he helped me write that too, because he was still very close around me when I was writing this, and so some of the words just kind of dropped in and I didn't know where they were coming from, so I think he helped. And that to me also sort of highlights another reason for, and probably one we've touched on, another reason for writing. It can help us figure something out and help us in the process of trying to understand something that's going on, even though we don't understand it at the time. It can be very healing that way. Of an expression of something our mind has no place to to put, that when I was 19, I had no idea what spirits were, and I didn't know when he came to me the night he died. I had no idea what this was I was seeing, although it was him, and he spoke to me. Mm-hmm. So the writing of that, and I had no one to speak to about it, so the writing of that, when I finally did write it, it gave it some, it's like it put it down, so I could, it was a reality for me, and now what do I do with it?
Yeah, and it's, there's so much room for that in poetry or in open verse, because it doesn't really have to make sequential sense in the way that prose would have to make sequential sense. So people can take these flashes of symbols or images and integrate them in whatever ways make sense to them. But I notice even when I'm writing, I actually wrote a poem, this was years ago, after I did an ayahuasca ceremony, and it was a pretty intense ceremony for me. And I was pretty, I went through about 3 or 4 weeks, I would say, of major integration. And I wrote about it because I was so traumatized, I would say, when I came out of that ceremony, not because the ceremonialist did anything traumatizing or because there was anything wrong with the ceremony, but because of what the ceremony was revealing to me, that the only way I could actually make sense of it at the beginning was to write about it. It was a very strange experience, but I was so grateful that at that time I had already had that strategy in place of writing about things, you know, writing in my diary or my journal, because it really helped me to start to place that experience somewhere so it wasn't just floating around in a way that was causing me distress, you know?
Yes, it's a great point, and poetry and writing absolutely does that. And it's almost like it grounds us. It brings it into a different place for us to perhaps have a look at it or help us, you know, in our understanding of it. Mm-hmm. If I may say, when I was going through the darkest period of my life and felt like I had no connection to anything, it was actually a song, and probably a songwriter, but the lyrics of a song somehow was a thread in the darkness. I felt I had no connection to anything. So I was in this blackness and suicidal, the whole thing. And yet somehow the lyrics, so this again is the writing, it was like a thread, a lifeline in the darkness. I don't know how or why, but that's another, another what I'm hearing you say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, music's always done that for me too, Sue. I can remember as a teenager listening to songs, and I can trace the healing in those songs. And it kind of leads me to another question I wanted to ask, because I've spent a lot of time thinking about, well, what's the difference between writing or composing songs to heal with the intent to heal and writing or composing songs with the intent to entertain? Sometimes they mix, but oftentimes they don't. And I'm wondering if you've wrestled with that and if you see a difference between the two.
I do see a difference between the two, and I see that in poetry as well. And I would say I just personally will just be drawn to poetry and music that has something for me. I'm generally not drawn to entertainment value sometimes. And I would say that's kind of just a personal preference, you know, and there's nothing wrong with poetry and music for entertainment. And there's a place for poetry and music that's got the healing potential. Mm. That's about the best I could say to that. One thing I would like to say, almost coinciding with that, my experience in high school and university of poetry was of being given a poem by a famous poet and being asked to interpret it, and being marked on whether my interpretation, and this may be a poem that was for entertainment or had a deep value, and my mark was based on how close my interpretation came to the Coles Note version or some scholar's version. And I was going to ask you, what do you think of that? Mm-hmm. And does that still happen today? Because if I were the teacher, I would give gold stars, many gold stars, to the students who came up with the most out-of-the-box interpretation.
Well, I'm an English minor, so I actually had a lot of struggles with professors around this very issue. And that was just 15 years ago, Sue. You know, I think you're always going to get in some professions people who, you know, teachers that, in this case, a teacher that wants you just to regurgitate information or agree with their interpretation of the book or the piece of poetry or whatever it is. I had both. I had teachers that were wanted to hear, some of them wanted to hear actually our perspective, our own interpretation, and they, as long as it was backed up with evidence from the book or from the poem, then it was fine. And then there were other teachers that wanted a closer, they kind of just wanted me to regurgitate what they had talked about or their interpretation in class. So I can't say that does not happen, but for me, the beauty in the writing or in music is that it does have the potential to grab somebody in a different way. And that's totally an experiential thing. So everybody's bringing their own life experience to something when they read it or when they listen to a piece of music. And that's as it should be. I send a lot of things out into the world, and I do a lot of writing, and I'm always stunned at reflections I get back of how people have interpreted the work. And a lot of times it's way, way different than the reason I wrote it or what my interpretation was of that particular piece. But that's okay. That's the nature of this kind of work, similar to, like, you can give somebody a healing tool, and it's the same tool, but depending on how people use it in their lives, it's going to have different results, right?
Yes, and also work that's done for entertainment can actually impact people. Mm-hmm. It's the same. To me, it's the same thing. You never know what is going to resonate with somebody, or how it's going to resonate with them, or, you know, bring something up. So I think there's value in all writing, all poetry, all art.
Yeah, some of the best philosophers are comics. You know, I listen to some of them, and I'm like, wow, there is a way to deliver a point with humor, but in a way that we see ourselves in sort of different ways sometimes when we listen to those folks. So, yeah. Now, is there a final word or a message or something you want to leave the listeners today, Sue?
Read Dr. Seuss. I would, my encouragement is to embrace creativity of your children, be receptive, encourage it, and do the same to yourself. Embrace your own creativity with no guidelines, no judgments. Just be creative expression, just because, and have fun doing it.
Thanks, Sue, for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Sue Burley lives in Peachland, BC, Canada. To find out more about Sue and the work she does, go to www.sueburley.com. And to find out more about the book that Sue's work appears in, go to www.womenspowerstories.ca. Big thanks to Sue for being on the show, and thanks to all of our listeners that are out there, and to the producer of this show, Marielle Smith. Good night, everybody.